all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn man to destruction and say, return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it passed, and like a watch in the night. You carry them away like a flood, they are like a sleep. In the morning they are like grass which grows up. In the morning it flourishes and grows up. In the evening it is cut down and withers. For we have been consumed by your anger, and by your wrath we are terrified. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long, and have compassion on your servants. O satisfy us early with your mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us, the years in which we have seen evil. Let your work appear to your servants, and your glory to their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Tonight we come to the very last of the studies on Christian marriage. And this is study number 8, entitled Growing Old Together. Although this is the last study, we know that we have not covered everything, and some things could have been covered more thoroughly than what we have done. For example, in one of the talks, we rushed through things. We could have broken that into 2 talks. If that had been done, this would be study number 9. But having rushed through that talk, we still managed to cover until this point, talk number 8. And as we come to the end of this study, we want to bear in mind that there are many things else that can be said or need to be said. But I believe we have achieved our purpose of providing a biblical view of marriage and to help the believer. And I hope that this series will be a guide to God's children who are considering marriage and those who are already married. And it will serve as a warning also on the very various issues that we are confronted with in marriage, and also, most of all, to be an encouragement to all of us in our married life. And of course, for older people as well, we look back, we come to realize that we have not done everything biblically, we have not done everything well, but nevertheless, God has been gracious. Many things have been overlooked, and God has undertaken for us. We don't say that, you know, I didn't do things that way, and yet things work out well. Now, that does not mean that, therefore, what we have done were correct. We must rather say, thank God for his mercy upon us. Despite the fact that we were ignorant and we did not do things right, God nevertheless saw through it that we did not suffer too much of the consequences, and often turning around what could have been a disaster into a blessing. So we thank God for all that. But it is good to know God's will and then to do it. So I believe we have arrived at a point where we can now stand back and consider this last talk. And what are the stages of marriage we have looked at? We have looked at courtship. We have looked at the wedding itself. We have looked at adjusting to married life. We have looked at raising children. And tonight we are looking at growing old. Then for those who are new here, you might be wondering, so this is study number 8. How come we have only 5 stages if we have covered each stage? Now, we also covered various other things. We began, for example, with trying to discover biblically the essence of marriage and what is involved. And along the way, we dealt with various views and various difficulties that people face or might face in marriage. So those issues take up a few studies. And including these five stages of the married life, we come to this very last talk, growing old together. So in this talk, what do we hope to accomplish? What we hope to accomplish is to see what to expect and prepare for as we grow old together as husband and wife. Now, there are three sections. In the first section, we want to consider the children as they leave home. So in this, we start with this section, as children leave home. Then we are going to look at growing old together, and finally, readiness to depart. And it sounds a bit sad to have to cover subjects like this, but it is part of life. It is part of marriage. We have to cover this to be complete. It's not thorough. We know already that there are other things that need to be said or could be said more, but we want to be comprehensive. We want to cover also this last stage of married life. So in the first section of this talk, we want to consider the situation when children begin to leave home. Now, we have covered raising children to the point when they are late teens. So when they are young, rules need to be set and discipline is needed while instructions are given. Instructions are given not only face to face but also shoulder to shoulder. We pray for them for their salvation. Our aim is that they might be led in the direction that they should go according to the teaching of the Bible. And at the same time, we are conscious that salvation belongs to the Lord and we can only nurture them. So remembering our role, model after Christ's office of head of the church. So the husband is the head of the family, and together with the wife, they rule over the family. So being head of the church, Jesus Christ occupies the three offices of prophet, priest, and king. And we want these three offices to be brought to bear in the family, and especially in raising children. So children has to be instructed, children have to be prayed for, children has to be disciplined and guided in various practical issues of life. And by the time they reach round about 12, you don't smack them anymore. You seldom do have to smack them if you have begun from young, see. And of course, when they are extremely young, the degree and the intensity of the smacking would be according to what they can take. The purpose to be accomplished must be borne in mind. We don't whack a child more than what he can take, forgetting that the purpose is to discipline the child, to mold his character. And each person also differs from another, not only physically. So a physically large person can take a whacking, but a physically weaker person cannot take such a whacking. And furthermore, the temperament of the individuals differ. The person might be large, but the point is if he's a sensitive person, ready to learn. And that is what we want to accomplish. So there's no need for severe punishment. So corporal punishment is needful. But in some nations, as we have noted, laws have been passed to prevent corporal punishment of any kind. And if you live in such a nation, it is best to fit into the law of that nation, even though we disagree with that. We don't believe that the government has a right to interfere in the way we raise children. But the law being such, the moment you are reported by your neighbors or your relatives, you go to jail, then you become useless and it causes trauma between you and your children. Your children don't want to see you in jail, but you are in jail. And that sort of situation would be traumatic. And the state never see it that way. They think they are doing such a great job, and often they portray the worst side of the corporal punishment to show that you have deserved being imprisoned or being punished in some ways. Failing to see that that caused such trauma between the parent and the children. See? So all this have to be considered. But what we are saying is that we don't foolishly break the law and then we end up in prison. And each time we keep ending up in prison. So what do you accomplish? So we try to adjust. Not that we agree with the law, but we try to adjust and do away with the corporal punishment when that is really necessary. And we replace it with some form of withdrawal of or withholding of privileges. See? So, and in fact, corporal punishment should be administered to the minimum when other methods can be used. But take note that when the Bible teaches us to use the rod, it must begin with a literal interpretation. It must mean that the rod has to be used somewhere along the way for some children. Some children are particularly rebellious and therefore they deserve it. And we have also covered how we go about it. We don't just, you know, harm the child. The purpose is to make it painful enough for the child to learn. And also we say we don't unnecessarily shame the child in public, in corporal punishment. We often do it in the quiet of the room. And along the way, we want to make sure that the child knows for what reason he's being punished. And often we pray together after he's being punished. Okay? So all this, I hope you looked at the notes up or listened to the talks of the past. And of course, many of the talks being spoken offhand and things wouldn't be that tidy. But if you listen back to those talks, you can get overall what we are trying to say. Then, as they grow to teenage years, remember to let go more and more, to allow them to make decisions. In fact, in their growing years, you should be already training them to make decisions. And you can still have considerable influence over their life without being so obvious. And I give the example of, say, going shopping, and then you want to buy a shirt for the child. You may say, you know, which one would you prefer? You see? And the child may say, I want this. You see? Then if you think it's not so suitable, you say, you think he would want that? Wouldn't it be too red? Or something like that. You know, the child will quickly say, you know, I think I'll change my mind, I'll take the other one. So you might say, oh, that one, that might be more suitable to you. You know, that's a good choice. So the child feels that he's making the decision. The child has been trained to take more responsibility. Then at home, of course, get the child to sweep the floor, to wash the dishes, and to chop firewood in the days when we live in a village, and to do other manual work. And if you have mates at home, be very careful. While mates are helpful if you are a busy couple with many children at home, but be very careful. Don't allow the mates to spoil your children. There are things that your children must do themselves. Okay? So discipline must be cultivated. When they wake up, they must fold their own blankets. See, when they brush their teeth, they must close back their toothpaste tube. You see, things like that. Little things, putting back things where they belong. Little things. You don't have to make too big an ado out of situation, but just along the way to cultivate little discipline here and there so that the overall character of the child is being molded. And in that way, the time comes when they are in the late teens and they want to go out with their friends. And you can't treat them as children anymore. You have to allow them more and more opportunities to go out with their friends, and often in a group. And we want to know who their friends are and tell them, encourage them to bring their school friends home so that we know them. And make sure you talk to their school friends and be friendly to them. And that way your son or daughter would be more willing to bring them home, and you will be amazed of the indirect influence you have even upon their friends, not let alone on your own children. See, and as this bunch of children grow up, the days come when you are old man, old lady. These people are adults already. They will meet you on the street or meet you somewhere. They still remember you, and they can still look back upon the positive impact you have been upon their lives. So it is important that we respect children as they grow up. Don't treat them just as small kids and nag at them and set rigid rules. And rules there are, but we want to be more and more lax and make them take responsibility as time goes on. And nowadays, especially with handphones, they should be very helpful to us. And especially for boys, and in a Malaysian situation where the day is long, say 12 o'clock, staying out 12 o'clock at mama's shop is nothing. So why be so afraid? You know, 12 o'clock already, you should be home and so on. Okay, if for girls walking alone, we wouldn't allow for that. We want to instill in them the danger of situations like that. But don't stop them from going out together. Girls might want to go out with their friends in the afternoon after school. to go for a show. You know, why hinder them? Why stop them? And as they grow older, they might want to go for a show at night. Just arrange to pick them up from the mall or from wherever. You see, just things like that. And if they are doing anything with their friends, offer to fetch them or to go and bring them back. You see, so little things here and there can make a great difference to your relationship with your children. And children, really, from the time they are young, learn to respect them. Don't just belittle them and you know, sort of harsh treat them. You see? Belittling them and harsh treating them is not good. They will remember as they grow up, you see. And how sad they are when they look at their friends' parents and their friends are not treated like that, and their own parents treat them as slaves, you know, as so oppressed at home, you see. And home is not a happy place to come back to. So we don't want that. So of course we don't want laxity such that they go wild. We have already been careful about this, that as acting out the role of Christ in the home, prophet, priest and king, we should already be molding the character of the child, and then to the point when he reaches late teens. So that is the point we arrived at. Now that child is ready to leave home, see? And if you're not careful, you discover that you are not even aware that they are leaving home, and they are not going to be home much after that. You see, hey, are you awake? You know, the years are flying past. They are now grown up. You see, they are in the late teens, perhaps 18 years old. They are going for further studies, or for those countries with national service, they might have to go for 2 years of national service, something like that. So national service come back, that means they are 2 years older. You know, in between, they might come home once in a while to visit, but they are hardly home anymore. Eh? Then after that, they are going to embark on their studies or on the job, you see. Or for others who don't go for further studies or national service, they might be apprenticed somewhere, they might undergo training, they might join the company, and the company is sending them somewhere for training, and then they will be assigned somewhere. And they might not be staying back home anymore. Of course, they will visit, but that's different, you know. They are already leaving home. And if you are not awake, you don't realize that, you know, suddenly you come to be aware that, hey, you know, since that time that he goes for further studies, he has not been home much. You see, of course, what do you expect? You were sleeping. You didn't realize that they were leaving home already. You see, so we must be aware of this. Huh? And of course, as one by one, the children grow up and want to go for further studies. It's a burden on parents, especially when the children want to study and they have the abilities to study. Some want to study, but they are not able. They struggle so much, see. And after some trials, some courses that might be helpful to them, they might have to consider start working somewhere. But if they are able to study, generally they want to study, see. Seldom do you find a person who is able to study but do not want to study. And if they are able to study and want to study, wow, it's difficult for parents not to allow them to study. And this is where we have to find the money for them to study. And what are some of the possibilities? One possibility is that you have to rely on your savings. All these years you should be saving for the time when the children are ready for higher education and expenses are involved. Another possibility is to get loans of various kinds from various places. And then scholarships are offered. And remember, scholarships are few in between, you see. So you hear of one or two persons among your friends who get scholarships, but you see, each institution can offer how many scholarships. So compared to the number of students, how many scholarships are being offered, and how many institutions are there, and how many scholarships are there, you see. So some get scholarships, but your children might be quite bright, above average, but they might not get scholarships. Then you have to find ways. And one other possibility is for them to work part-time. As they study, some arrangement can be made for them to work part-time. So by various means, commit the problem. Yes, it is a problem to parents. Commit it to the Lord. then the Lord will lead us, the Lord will open up the way. You know, it's such a sad thing. If they can study and they want to study and you don't allow them to study simply because you don't have the funds. See? And this is where, if in your planning for the number of children, you have planned for this and allow the age gap to be a bit bigger from 2 years or more. So in that way, when one goes to college or university, and then it will be 2 years later before the next one goes, so two are at university, then before the third one goes, the first one has already graduated and started work. So that way it is lighter. Okay, that is if you have planned in advance. But if the age gap between the children is too large, you discover that they don't interact well in their growing years. So this is where the balancing act comes. You want the brothers and sisters to grow up to be companions to one another. So you don't want their age gaps to be too big. And remember that the problem of education comes in only in a modern setting. In the old days, children are needed to help in the farms and in other family work. And so the children can be many and the age gap can be so narrow. And so you produce many and many of them go to the farm and many help together. Then one or two out of the many children would go for higher education. So this is a modern phenomenon where, as far as possible, we would like all our children to have a higher education to start them off well. And whatever profession or job they take up in later days, that's up to them. But as parents, it would be good to encourage them to go as high as they can in their studies. And if they really are the type who cannot study, then don't force them. And even when they are able to study, we have noted already in our last study, don't dictate to them what course they should study. Okay? And often it is that without you forcing, they already are influenced, willingly influenced by the fact that you are in a certain profession and they are somehow, you see, influenced along that line. And in your talking to them along the way, they are already being directed or encouraged in the direction you want them roughly to go. But do not dictate to them, you see. Just like in growing years, they have to be generally learning to make decisions. Similarly, when the crunch comes, when they have to choose the course and the institution they want to study at, this is where you can guide them and be involved in the decision-making process, but don't dictate to them. You dictate to them and they go and study a course which they are not interested in, but they do so just to please the parents, you discover is a drudgery to them. It's painful for them. And yeah, you heard of the story of a man in my growing years. I learned of these studies, of this case. He studied medicine, and when he finished study, he brought his certificate back to his parents and said, "I've done what you wanted. Now I want to do what I want." And he went to study electrical engineering and became the electricity board engineer with the title doctor. And his doctorate is really a medical, it's not a PhD doctorate, it's a medical doctor, but his profession is actually an electrical engineer. Yeah, a real case which we know of, which I heard of from very early, see? So we wouldn't want that to happen, and there are many other cases like that which we try to avoid. And of course, mistakes are made sometimes. Even children, they think they're making the right decisions along the way, they fumble. And allow mistakes to be made, just like in other areas of life. The main thing is that we learn from the mistakes. Why be too unduly harsh upon your child when he or she has already made a mistake? Say, we don't want to be like that. And even up to this point in their studies, we don't want to be too harsh upon them. Okay? Now, as your children begin to leave home, we take note that with modern technology, keeping in touch with them is not as bad as before. In the early days, to go somewhere far, let alone overseas, is such a painful thing. You know, you have to wave the person goodbye, you see the person off, it's so heartbreaking. And then when you're away, it may be a long time before you return. See? But nowadays, with handphone, with Skype, with electronic equipment, we can be in touch much. Now, we thank God for all this, but still, we want to take note of the fact that we have to be in touch as much as we can. And while we are in touch, nevertheless, take note that they are physically away. And before they leave, they should be putting as a priority, seeking out a good church wherever they will be. So, for example, if they are going for further studies, they are seeking an institution that offers the course that he or she wants. So this university and that university, that university. Then the next thing you should look for would be whether there's a good church nearby. Good church nearby, and that one, no good church nearby, out. So you, between the ones that have good churches, so you consider. In that way, they zoom in on the university or whatever institution he or she wants to study at, and when your child arrives, there is a church that he or she can go to. And thank God that the church of the Lord has grown. In many parts of the world, in many major cities, there are good churches. But of course, we want to find a church that is sound, where we can tell our son or daughter to go there without any qualms. That would be the best, see. And of course, finding a good church is in order that their faith might be kept alive and they keep growing spiritually. And growing spiritually means that they attend as many meetings as possible, they are involved as much as they are able. But at the same time, be realistic, they are students. So their chief responsibility as students, their main responsibility is to study, see. And don't allow the enthusiastic pastor of the church draw your son or daughter away and get so involved to the extent that the studies suffer, see. We would be foolish, you know, that our spirituality is misplaced. So we want to know ourselves. And of course, churches need to know as well, not to overload students. But on the other hand, you see, if your son or daughter has been trained well from home and from in a church setting, you discover that without overloading himself, he will be wanting to do whatever he can in God's work. And it's just a pleasure to be involved in the life of a church and to be involved in God's work. And in that way, we grow as well. The growing comes chiefly from the teaching we receive, but we also want to serve. And it is, we don't hold to the view that you must serve in order to grow. See? We hold to the view rather that you must seek first for a church that is faithful to God's word. See? Without feeding, you can't serve. So the priority is first to find a church where there's good teaching. Then when you have found a church with good teaching, soon enough your hands will be full of the things you want to do to serve the Lord there. You see? So both are important in a sense, but there is a certain priority. The priority is to seek for a church where there is faithful teaching of God's word. Okay? So this is what we must be concerned about, that wherever they go, they have a good church to settle in. And we don't want them to have to consider traveling 2 hours to arrive at church. That would be quite impractical when they are students. Okay? Then take note that there are those who do not choose to further their studies. And you have encouraged them in their growing years. They have tried their best and you really have done what you can to encourage them and to help them in their studies, to make studies enjoyable, but along the way they find that they are not cut out for studies. Now, if everyone in the world were to go to university, then who would be those who work in other areas of life? You see, so certainly there are those who are not capable of higher studies, but that doesn't mean that they are less respectable as a person. And such people might want to pick up a vocation somewhere and to be trained somewhere in a job, perhaps as a car mechanic or whatever. Now, such a job is also an honorable life, and we mustn't think that it is somehow inferior to a person who graduates from university. So we must teach our children properly and such that they don't feel diffident about themselves. They can stand tall in the world for as long as they know the Lord. What is important is the Lord's approval upon us, not what the world thinks of us. And so again, if such a son or daughter ends up not going for further studies, but instead end up with a job somewhere, this is what you must ensure that you keep in mind, that you don't somehow convey the impression that that is somehow inferior to going to university and then get a blue collar job or a white collar job or what do you call that, you know. But the point is that a manual worker who is godly is doing an honorable job, and a needful job, because in society each person has to be in a different area. And you will discover that if the person, your son or your daughter, finds the area of his strength, he can do well in that area. He does well in that area and he's happy in that job, and then he, in due time, have a happy family. He raised up children who might be able to study higher, further than him, but for himself he's happy and he feels contented and he feels satisfied in his so-called manual job. So what's wrong with that? So more importantly is the person be a godly man or godly woman. Whatever profession you find yourself in, make sure that godliness is first. And of course, as the children leave home one by one, the so-called emptiness syndrome begins to set in for the husband and wife. We begin to look at one another and we come to realize, you know, it is as though we are going through one cycle. When we first got married, then we began to have children, and we're so busy, the years seem to fly past so quickly, and then now we are again alone together, see. But we are much older. And as has been noted already, if you do not cultivate the husband-wife relationship, instead you just focus on your children, and your children become the glue between you, you discover that when the children leave home, the relationship between you become loose, see, because the glue is gone, see, and you don't want that to happen. So you must learn to cultivate the husband-wife relationship as a priority. It is the primary relationship compared to the parent-child relationship. Okay, so children generally are stronger emotionally and psychologically when their parents are in good relationship. And you, as mentioned before, you can make a survey, and I can guarantee you that all those from broken homes, they were badly affected because their parents have not been in good relationship. When there's tension at home, it affects the upbringing of the children. The children's psychology and emotion, they are affected. See? So, of course, thank God that they managed to get over all these trials at home. And in God's mercy, when they are converted, they become all the more stronger, and they can appreciate, understand people with family problems. But it is a fact. We know that husband-wife relationship does affect the development of the children. So if you bear in mind that husband-wife relationship is first before the parent-child relationship, then you discover the child will grow up stronger, healthier, in a healthier environment. Okay? So when the so-called emptiness syndrome sets in, we come to accept it in stride, knowing that now we have more time together. Let us now do things together. And of course, our life is still centered around the church and around the Lord's work. So together we can do things which we were hindered from doing when our children were growing up. Okay? So this then is some thoughts concerning the so-called emptiness syndrome. And then as the children leave home and then they work, they find a job somewhere, you discover that they are announcing to you, this is somebody I'm getting to know and with a view of marriage in mind. Okay. So what we have learned throughout this series now comes full cycle. Our children go through the process now, And the time comes when he or she gets married, see. And while they go through the stage of working and finding a potential life partner and finally announcing about themselves getting married, we are praying for them in their absence. We are in touch with them. We inquire about their welfare. Along the way, as we are able, we provide guidance without being too intrusive or to appear to be nagging. Yeah. And of course, children, as they grow up in a home, must understand that sometimes we appear to be nagging. But understand this. Firstly, parents mean well. Parents on their part must learn not to nag as far as possible. But parents do mean well. Secondly, what is told to the older children, the younger children haven't heard. So the older children might think, you know, you're repeating yourself, when in fact the parents are thinking of the good of the younger children. In their younger days, when those things were said, they couldn't appreciate it, but they arrive now at the age where this needs to be taught them or be reminded to them. So the older ones might say, no, my parents are always repeating the same thing. See? So actually it's not. See? And then furthermore, just as parents indulge in their children, overlook a lot of little things here and there, why can't children also overlook a bit of nagging on the part of their parents? Yeah? But ideally, we try to be aware that we don't want to come across as intrusive and nagging. Huh? Okay? But we are there. We are there to provide guidance. And there are times in their lives when they are at a loss. You say, yes, in their relationship and in their work, or in their studies, they meet with a crisis in their lives. The crisis may not be anything to you, but it is to them. You think that it is a small matter, but to him it is big at that point in time. So being more experienced and along the way being parents, you are in a unique situation to along the way guide them through that crisis. Okay. And we look back with deep gratitude in heart towards our God, because he sees us through so many storms in life. You see, as we see our children growing up, we think of the time when they wrestle with various issues, how our hearts were with them, see? How we prayed for them, how we were so anxious, and often we were having difficulty sleeping well, and we had to learn to commit things to the Lord and then commit them to the Lord, into the Lord's hand. And thankfully, one by one, they overcome one thing after another. And remember, the world has been going on with people facing trials of various kinds. So it's not that we are so much needed to prevent all these trials. See, that our children will somehow be able to overcome them in due time. But the point is that being people who trust the Lord, we want to commit things to the Lord. And if we can help them, we want to be of help to them. And if they can avoid unnecessary pain, we would like to see them avoiding those pains. See? So that is basically what we want to do. Okay? Then take note that Western society tends to set an age for children to leave home. And normally it is 18. By 17 plus, the parents begin to hint to you that it's time that you leave home. But the person is not ready for life outside alone. But because it is the thing, see. So they quickly search out some friends and rent a room somewhere, or rent an apartment, and each have a room of their own. But what do you accomplish by sending them out like that? Make them be more independent, make them realize that money is not easily earned, you know, and things like that. Firstly, I say there's no biblical basis for that practice, you see. And secondly, you know, have you no heart of the parent you want to send your children out? The 17, 18, okay, they are reasonably mature, but you know, they could still benefit so much from parental guidance and from a home, you know, from being in a home. See, and you're sending them out so early, and to me, I feel like it is a bit early to just push them out. You see, and your intended objective of making them more independent and making them value money and things like that, I don't think you accomplish much there. See, and it is like sending children too early to boarding schools. And you know, if you read the biography of Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones. You see, he was sent to boarding school early, and in later years, in the train, he saw parents bidding goodbye to their children who were going back to a boarding school. Lloyd-Jones bowed his head and he was weeping away, remembering his early years. See, he left home too early. He could have benefited from parental love, from interacting with parents and siblings at home. You see, there's so much development to catch up on, but he was sent to boarding school too early. See, and I would think that, you see, the sending a child 13, 14 years old to boarding school is quite cruel. You know, if you can avoid that, avoid that. And well-to-do families think that, you know, they can afford it, they can give the children a good start, you see, and they send their children away, you know. But emotionally and psychologically, it's not good for them. And also furthermore, being godly parents, believing parents, we want them to be near us for as long as we can, to continue to mold them and guide them, you see. And I would say, even at age 17 or 18, don't push them out. No, home is still home to them, see. And the biblical pattern appears to be that only when they are married, then they go out. And generally speaking, we would say between the something like age 25 to age 35, they would be getting married and going out, you see. But you say, it might be abuse. My son, up to age 40, is still not married. So he's earning a living and he's still living off home. I would say, in those exceptional situations, let him continue to have a room at home, and this is his home, you see. And of course, if you have brought your son up well enough, you discover that your son will automatically think of contributing to the needs of the home if the parents are struggling financially without you demanding that he contribute to the upkeep of the home. The son would naturally want to contribute something. But if the parents can afford it, they will say to the son, keep it, save it for your wedding. See, continue to be at home. What's the big deal? He's your son. You are his parents, you see. And to us, however old they may be, we are older than them. We are always their parents. So why want to have a cut-off age and then begin to treat them as an outsider? You see, is that not what it amounts to? I say, you know, I have no heart to do that. And I don't think biblically you can support that sort of practice. Okay? So I would say no. You see, generally speaking, we allow them to make their own decisions, and we don't insist that by a certain age, especially age 18, age 18, you know, the child has to start going to find a place of its own outside. I don't have the heart as a parent to do so, and I believe the Bible is on my side rather than on this practice of sending them out. Okay? So these are thoughts, some thoughts that you want to pursue, and I'm always ready to get your feedback. Okay? But by the way, a lot of this stuff in this series of studies are quite original. You don't get them anywhere else. Right? So, I mean, in any books. So I hope you appreciate all this. Okay? Then we come to section number 2, growing old together. So as grandchildren come, a new and exciting phase begin. And as we have, those who are parents know, when a child comes, you know, the bond between the parent and the child is naturally there. It must be the odd character, the unusual, extremely rare case where the parent does not love the child. And I can testify that even before the child is born into the world, the child is in the womb. You see, the love for the child is already there. It's an unusual thing. And similarly, when a grandchild comes, you see, grandparents naturally dote over the grandchild. It's something natural, something that God has given us as human beings. Okay? And this is only in heaven that this is no more. No more doesn't mean it becomes worse, but no more, but raised to a higher level. Okay? But what we are saying is, while on earth, God placed us in family relationship, and this is one of the natural things God has put in us. We are by nature like that, so it's natural. Just as a parent naturally loves his child, so grandparents love their grandchildren. That is why you must learn to be careful and be sensitive, okay? Don't say negative things about somebody's grandchild, okay? The grandparents feel it strongly, just as the parents do, okay? So learn this, be wise, okay? And you think that the child is so ugly, you see, ayyo, so ugly, you know, but to the grandparents, the child is the most beautiful creature on earth, okay? So don't you just say things that are negative and unhelpful, okay? So understand this. And then grandparents on their part must know their boundaries in their relationship with the grandchildren. And remember, the teaching of the Bible is that the father is the head of the family, okay? And it follows, therefore, that the father has the immediate responsibility of exercising the role of headship in the home. So acting as prophet, priest, and king, raising up the children. So grandparents are one step detached from the family. So grandparents must not intrude into that immediate family. You are part of the family, no doubt. And biblically, we can show this. Even when Abraham died, the Isaac and Jacob were present at their Esau and Jacob were. When Isaac died, Esau and Jacob were present at the funeral. So they still retain that sort of relationship, which means that their children, their family members would have come as well, right up to death. So death severs such family relationship. But as long as we are alive on this earth, grandparents are part of the extended family. But the point is that grandparents must be careful not to intrude into the immediate family. Don't smack the child unless the parents specifically say, you know, if he's naughty, please smack him as needed in our absence. So if the parents leave the child with you to care for when they are away on holiday, perhaps for 2 or 3 weeks, and they leave definite instructions to smack, then we'll smack as needed, just like we would to our children. But otherwise, we try not to. Let the discipline and the bulk of the instruction be given by the parents. And often it is that in our interaction as grandparents with grandchildren in their growing years, we would often have to say, let's see what your parents say. Okay? In other words, the grandchild may say to the grandpa, oh, do this, do that, we do this or do that for me. But we have to first seek the parents' permission or seek out what they think of it first. So we have to learn to say to the grandchildren, let's see what your parents say. Okay? Now, of course, we must see things more positively, that there are many benefits that come from interaction with godly grandparents. From infancy to their teenage years and even beyond. Okay? And really, the benefits is really, I call it inestimable. Okay? And in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5, we learn of Timothy, who was mentioned in connection with his mother and grandmother. And if you note very carefully, the spiritual development of young Timothy was not only influenced by his mother, but also by his grandmother. In 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5, we are told this, 2 Timothy, not 1 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5, when I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother and Louis, your mother, and your mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded in you also. The way it is mentioned, you see, although faith is individual, you can't be saved by proxy because your mother is a believer, so you are saved automatically. No. Or your grandmother is a believer, so everyone in the family is saved. There's no such thing. Each individual must repent of sin and come to faith in Christ. But the way it is mentioned shows that there is a connection in how God used the family to bring about faith in young Timothy. And this is confirmed in the subsequent, in chapter 3, verse 14. We are told there in chapter 3, verse 14, but you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of knowing from whom, and assured of knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. So here the indication is that from childhood Timothy has been exposed to Bible teaching. And to be exposed to Bible teaching in such an influential manner has to be from his own family members. It cannot be by Paul visiting occasionally, but it's by the family. So the grandma and the mother had been influential in Timothy coming to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And we think of a situation like C.H. Spurgeon. For some reason, his parents sent him to stay with his grandparents. So his grandfather was a minister, a pastor of a church. And those years were formative years. And Spurgeon records that he liked to hide in his grandfather's library and read the books. See? And that was where he read through the Pilgrim's Progress, and it left such a deep impression upon him. And although he was not converted immediately, but in his growing years in his grandfather's house, those things were well remembered by him. Then in later years, around about age 16, when he was walking through snow to church, he was diverted by the heavy snow to a primitive Methodist church. There, that funny preacher preached, asking the hearers to look to Christ. Look, young man, you look miserable there. You must look to Christ. And that was how Spurgeon was converted. So although his conversion occurred at age 16, at that point, remember that God had been working in his life from early years. And you can imagine that the influence of the grandparents must have contributed to his spiritual pilgrimage. Okay. So all in all, we must see that there is great benefit for children to grow up knowing their grandparents and having interaction with them. But of course, if you marry late, and furthermore, if you happen to be the youngest among your siblings, and you further marry late, and then your children are going to come much later, the grandparents are going to be gone before the grandchildren have much interaction with the grandparents. And that can be helped, but you know, it's such a pity, isn't it? Huh? So if you value such influence, beneficial influence, you see how wonderful it is to have godly grandparents being around. Then now looking at the couple again, we are getting older as children grow up and get married and have grandchildren. We see our grandchildren. What about the two old men and old lady? We consider love and looks. They are practical issues that must be faced. You see? And there is an expression called aging gracefully. What does that mean? And I would summarize it under three factors. The aging process, our looks, and our attitude. To age gracefully means basically that you are above 50 years old, 50 and above. You cannot be younger. And to say that you're aging gracefully when you are before 50, everyone will be trying to control their laughter. You know, you're hardly old yet and you're talking about aging gracefully. But when you're beyond 50, especially when you pass the 60 mark, like it or not, you're looked upon as an old man. People begin to call you uncle everywhere. In fact, before that already, people begin to call you uncle, say, or auntie. Okay? You know that you're getting on in years. Your heart may feel young. You might want to behave young. You might want to have so-called positive spirit and not be affected by all the negative thoughts of aging. But your wrinkles are there. Look at your picture now compared to, you know, look at passport pictures especially, you know, your present passport picture and the first passport that you have. Look, compare. You see, you're so different. You have aged. Okay. So we want to accept it and learn to be healthy and to look well as best we can. So the attitude of heart makes a lot of difference. If you fail to accept the fact that you are aging, you will have a lot of difficulty. It's like a person failing to accept what he is. For example, let us say, if you are born short, for example, you are Zacchaeus, you know. You keep looking at a tall person, you keep envious and you keep angry, and yet you know you're doing wrong by being angry at this brother. He didn't ask to grow tall, to be taller than you. He didn't ask to make you feel small. But you are struggling because you have lack of acceptance of the fact that you are born short, you see. So that type of struggle is so unnecessary, you see. You're struggling with self-esteem, you're struggling with comparison with others, and you're struggling with anger and envy at the brother when, in fact, he has done nothing wrong to you. And you have all these struggles. And similarly, if you are prone to be fat, or you don't have natural beauty, you see, then you are next to a young lady who is beautiful, you feel resentment against that person. And that sister, she might be beautiful, but she's not proud. And she's a godly lady. And here you are harboring hatred and you are trying to control yourself, and you see, all the struggles come to you. Similarly, when you are growing old, if there's lack of acceptance in your heart, you have difficulty. You can't say you're growing old gracefully. So the attitude of heart, of learning to accept the fact that each phase of life is over, now you are at the end phase. You are in the sunset years, you are growing old. Yeah? So the attitude is very important. And as you grow old, you see, remember it is a process and it is a stage, which means that you are not straight away at the point of death. You are still a number of years to go, you see. And this is where you must take care of your diet, and you must make sure you have sufficient exercise. You can't do those strenuous things that you were used to doing. But those things that you were used to doing stand as the good capital that you can rely on. That is why when young, make sure you take care of your health, make sure you take care of your diet, not that you become extreme. Anything right, good and true can be taken to extreme. You can abuse it, you can mishandle it. Okay? So here we don't want to abuse or mishandle dieting and good health. But from young, if you are the best that God has made you to be, you discover at old age you can draw on the capital that you have built up over the years. People fall sick, but you don't fall sick. And you thank God for it. See? And as people grow older, you discover certain things they can help, certain things they can't help. See? So what are things that they can't help? So dropping, the hair dropping off, getting bald. You can't help it. You apply whatever oil or whatever lotion, no, nothing seems to be effective. You can't help it. That is part of aging. Wrinkles come on you. You know, you try to put cream or whatever, you massage yourself daily, but still, wrinkles come. So certain things you have to learn to accept. Accept that in yourself, accept that in your spouse, because those cannot be helped. But where you can help, you must help as best you can. For example, dieting. The type of food especially is important, not just the amount. See, some people don't seem to eat too much. They eat much but not too much, and yet they put on extremely much weight. Why? Because of the type of food that you're eating. And as you grow older, remember your activity, your physical activity is getting less, and therefore you need less energy. You burn less energy, therefore your intake is needed, is less. And the equation that you can't run away from is energy input minus energy output equals fat. You see? Like it or not, that is a basic equation. You put in that much minus what you expend, you the energy output. The balance is weight, you see. Now you might argue there are many factors involved, but that basic equation you can't run away from. See? So if you are still eating as much as you were eating in younger days, but you are not engaging in so much physical activity as before, you discover you're overeating. Now you don't cut down drastically, but you reduce whatever amount to suit your situation. Okay? But having said all this, however well you take care of your looks and your diet, your metabolic rate is changing, your hormone cycle is changing, and therefore, like it or not, you are different from what you were in younger days. Okay? So even for a person who monitors his diet and his exercise carefully, such that he is optimum, still he cannot fight changes in his body. So the hormonal changes is such that you can't really optimize exactly. And often it is you discover that the person puts on weight despite the fact of being careful. And then the looks also vary. See, hair dropping off. You can't expect the person to continue keep long hair. You know, the person might have to trim. Certainly when you trim the hair and then you look different from what you were in the past. See, and we don't want to go to the extreme of plastic surgery and so on. We believe that that is, even if you are rich and can afford it, but we believe that that is, you have to be very careful. In other words, as a believer, you have to ask whether you are being vain and whether you are pretending to be what you are not, you see. And of course, certain things, certain medical procedure can be carried out more because of functional reasons rather than aesthetic reasons. See? So some people, for example, they put on big layer of fat. Wow, their stomach is so big now. They don't like it, you see. They don't like their looks. So more because of aesthetics, they go and have, you know, liposuction, you know, where they cut open, they cut and then they pump certain things, cut away the fat and whatever, you see, and then cut away some skin and make you appear slim again. But if you know the cases of people who have done liposuction where you discover they soon put on weight again, you see? And if you can't control your diet and make sure you exercise, in other words, your lifestyle does not change, your weight comes back again, you grow fat again. And if you understand how fatty tissues build up, you know that once fat has been built up, even when you thin down, it's not the number of cells that are reduced, but it is the size of each cell that is reduced. So the potential of those cells growing back to become fat again is high. See, unlike other situations where when you remove diet, you remove the whatever you put on. But no, here it is, the cells are there, the number of cells, but they only shrink. When you are not careful, they you put on again. So that's why it's so difficult to reduce weight when you become overweight. Okay. Now, we want to be the best that God has made us to be in health and in looks all the way right to the end of our life. Always bearing in mind that there are certain things we can't help and we have to accept. Okay. And you can go for so-called certain procedures more for functional purpose rather than for aesthetic reasons. Because if it is solely for aesthetic reason, you have to ask the question, are you not being vain and are you pretending to be what you are not? See? What do we mean by functional? For example, if your teeth are missing, you know, you want to put dentures. Of course it helps in your aesthetics, your looks, but it's more for functional purpose. You can't eat well, you need to dentures. So that's our situation. But if it is just to get yourself less fat and to be more slim or to have your eyes lifted up or your less wrinkles, I would say, hey, you have to. It's fine. The final decision is yours. Nobody can intrude into your personal liberties. But these are ethical questions that you have to ask yourself. Am I right to go for such procedures? Okay, even if you can afford it, these are expensive procedures. And no, furthermore, there's always a risk involved in some of these procedures. I would advise that you do things only when it's functional, because of functional reason more than aesthetic reason. Okay, for example, knee replacement. If you grow old and the knee is hurting and you can't walk, then you need to have a procedure done. But that is different from wanting to beautify yourself and tightening the facial skin and so on. Okay, so that is a different thing. Okay? So we move on. The looks and dressing we must take care of, be the best that God has made us to be without going overboard. In anything that is right, good and true, we can overdo things. But take note, However careful one is with diet and exercise, old age takes its toll on our health and looks. Wrinkles, hair loss, your teeth begin to go, putting on weight to some degree will occur. So be responsible in your choices, be accepting of your circumstances. Okay? Then remember, love is commanded in the Bible. The Lord commands us to love one another. See, a new commandment He has given us to love one another. Then between husband and wives, husband, love your wife. So after this many years of marriage, is she not still your wife? She's still your wife. Therefore, the command applies. You see? And Titus 2 verse 4, wife, love your husband. Yeah? Older woman, teach the younger woman to be homemakers and to love their husband. So wives also have to love their husband. So love is commanded of us, which means therefore that love, from the biblical point of view, cannot be just a sentimental feeling. It is more than that. It is an act of the will. You must make up your mind to want to love your wife and your wife to love your husband. And you know that biblical love is more than just feelings. It involves feeling. It does, because God makes us with feelings. To suppress feelings or to live out feelings in our consideration would be to be unbiblical. It would be to be unnatural. But what we must take note is that the biblical teaching is that while it does involve feelings, nevertheless, the primary thing is an act of the will. And it is an act of the will to be self-giving. See? We give of our time, of our energy, of ourself, even for the good of another person. That is biblical love, agape, self-giving love, like the Lord giving of Himself to us. See? So we must will ourselves to love our spouse. And as we grow older, we recall those early days when we were so much in love. Huh? And now we discover that love is less dependent on looks. Love is more on our relationship together. You see, we have been living together for so long. Somehow love develops. And that takes priority over other considerations. Yes, it is possible to be in love, see, even though we don't have the looks of our younger days. Yeah? Then we move on, readiness to depart. From the title of this last section alone, you feel a little bit of sadness, but it has to be dealt with. Keeping healthy and serving the Lord remain relevant in old age. And I want to state that it is a godly attitude to want to serve God even in old age. You look at some of the Bible references. Look at Psalm 89. Look at verse 46 to verse 48. How long, Lord, will you hide yourself forever? Will your wrath burn like fire? Remember how short my time is. For what futility have you created all the children of man? What man can live and not see death? Can he deliver his life from the power of the grave? See? So the psalmist realized that life is limited. So in his trials, he called up to God to deal mercifully with him. But throughout, it is with a view of service. Huh? You look at another psalm, Psalm 102, verse 11 and verse 12. We are told there, my days are like a shadow that lengthens, and I wither away like grass. But you, O Lord, shall endure forever, and the remembrance of your name to all generations. Then verse 23, he weakened my strength in the way, he shortened my days. I said, O my God, do not take me away in the midst of my days. Your years are throughout all generations. So verse 27. But you are the same, and your years will have no end. The children of your servants will continue, and their descendants will be established before you. So the desire is always to see God's name glorified. Our days may be short, but that is our aim. And similarly, if you look at Job chapter 10, look at Job chapter 10. Job in his trials said these words. Job chapter 10 verse 20 to 21. Are not my days few? Cease, leave me alone, that I may take a little comfort before I go to the place from which I shall not return, to the land of darkness and the shadow of death. Okay? And all in all, what we want to say is this: the writers, the godly people in the Bible, they were conscious of their days being short, and they always used that to plead to God. God, spare me more days so that I can serve you, so that I can glorify your name. See? And if we have been growing spiritually all through our Christian life, by the time of old age, we should be mature believers. Our gifts may differ, one individual for another, but all of us should grow in spiritual maturity. Hebrews chapter 5 tells us that by this stage, we should be teachers of the word. And we know that we can be mature only if we listen to God's word, we put it into practice. By reason of exercise, we learn to discern between what is right, what is good and bad, and be between eating meat and drinking milk. We learn to discern the difference. And similarly, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 12 to verse 15 shows to us that there are those who serve God. They build on the foundation, which is Christ. But they build differently. Some build with gold, silver, and precious stones. Some build with wood, hay, and straw. Those who build with wood, hay, and straw, what they have built will be burned away, while they are saved because they are building on Christ. In other words, we are talking about true believers. Two persons who are true believers. We are not comparing between a true believer and a professing believer who is not genuine Christian. See? There are those who profess to be believers who think they are Christian, but from the way they live, we know that they are not true Christians. And you need to know yourself. If you are not a true Christian, we are not talking about you tonight at this point. We are talking about two persons who are equally trusting in the Lord for their salvation. They are building on that one foundation, which is Jesus Christ. But how do they live out their Christian life? Some live shabbily, irresponsibly. They serve the Lord with like building with wood, hay, and straw. Judgment will burn away whatever they build on. But those who build with gold, silver, and precious stones, these precious stones do not fear fire. In fact, fire makes them more pure. So their works will stand, and they will be rewarded accordingly. Okay? So we want to make sure that we live well for the Lord all the way. So instead of having a retirement attitude like some people, I have to let the younger people do the work. So you retire from your place of work, now you also have a retirement attitude in God's service. That is not good, it is unhealthy. See? Instead of having that attitude, we should be all the more ready to serve God, often in teaching and in encouraging younger people. Yes, younger people must be allowed to make more decisions and do all the active work, but we must not hold back and have a retirement attitude. Instead, we are there to be of service to them. We don't want to all the time be leading, all the time to be dictating to them. Let them, they are old enough, mature enough to do God's work in their own generation. But we want to be available to help them, to encourage them. See? So training young people, being advisors, being there to be consulted. There's so much more to be done. And praying for gospel work, praying for workers. We have much work really to do. Then practically, health problems may set in to hinder our usefulness, much as we want to be useful in God's service. So what are some of these problems? Decrease in stamina. You know you can't run around, you can't go on mission trips like you did before and so on. Your stamina is getting less. Arthritis, bone problem, joint problem, yeah? Some hearing problem, sight problem. Then your heart may develop problem, palpitation set in and things like that. Then of special notice is the phenomenon of the menopause. What is menopause? Menopause occurs in women. At a certain age, although the age is not fixed, but generally on the average it occurs at age 51 years old. The menstrual cycle stops, see? And before the menstrual cycle stops, there is this gradual process by which it occurs. And this often has been identified as perimenopause. It is the period ranging from as early as late 30s. That means a person around about age 38 or so can already begin to be affected by this menopause problem. But most people, they are affected only in a few years before menopause. Menopause is when the menstrual cycle stops, the few years before that. Let us say menstrual cycle stops at age 51. Maybe the 3 or 4 years, 5 years before that happens, the person begins to feel the effect because the hormonal cycle is changing in the body. Less hormones is produced. Hot flashes may be felt. The person feel irritable, see? And fatigue is you feel like no energy, you see? Vaginal dryness and things like that. The spouse have to understand all this. Yeah? Then, increasingly, male menopause is being recognized. In the past, when this is mentioned, people laugh at it. Oh, got such thing. But actually, it is confirmed. Yeah? Except that it is biologically, there are some similarities, but there are also dissimilarity. Men don't have menstrual cycle, of course, so you can't compare directly with a woman. Okay? But the similarity lies in the decrease in hormone production in the man. And it has now been called andropause. And it occurs from about 50 years old to 80 years old. Eh? And causing problems like erectile dysfunction, fatigue, mood changes, palpitations of the heart. Eh? And sometimes you may wonder why the person is so irritable, hot-tempered. Or with others, they plunge into depression. Yeah. They withdraw themselves. They don't like to talk much, you see. So you may wonder what is happening. Actually, hormonal changes is taking place. And it's drawn out from about age 50 onwards all the way to up to age 80. Huh? And this does not mean, of course, that sexually they are inactive. They are still active, but they are not as active sexually to the same degree of intensity as their younger days. Okay? So don't assume that sexual things are not a problem or not needed by their older people. They continue to be sexually active, but not to the intensity as their younger days. But take note that there are bodily changes biologically happening in both men and women. And because women, once they reach menopause, they can adjust themselves and then they settle down to their new mode of life. But for the men, it might drag on until age 80. So to understand our bodily makeup will help us to beware and not to wrongly overreact to situations. Then the last point is widowhood and death. Psalm 90 verse 10 tells us that the average man from after Moses will be 70 years. We know that Moses himself lived up to 120 years and Joshua lived up to 110 years old. But Moses, by inspiration of the Holy Spirit, wrote down this psalm to show that subsequent generations will have their average age cut down to 70 years. And by reason of strength, it will be 80 years. Remember, before Moses, in the days of Abraham, people lived longer. And then even before that, before the flood, people lived even much, much longer. So when you read in the Bible that people live hundreds of years old, you say, you know, this is a myth. When you are first exposed to the Bible's teaching on this area, you thought it was a myth. Until it's explained to you, you come to see, hey, it makes sense. You see, no wonder in some countries you can still find people over 100 years old. You see, but even in our own country, people there are individuals who live up to 90 odd years old. But remember, according to the teaching of the Bible, and the Bible cannot be wrong, after the generation of Moses, the average age of mankind will be 70 years, and by reason of strength, it will be 80. Now, how do you understand that? One way would be to say, average is 70, so by 80, most people will die. But you find quite a lot of people still living beyond 80, quite many. to the extent that you wonder if that is the right understanding. I want to provide you with another understanding, and this is not speculation, it's just trying to understand that portion of scripture. If 70 and 80 are both average ages instead of 70 as the only average age, then it makes sense. See, if the average population, their average lifespan is 70 years old, and those who are particularly healthy, their average lifespan is 90. Don't look upon 80 as the maximum limit of all who are having 70 years as their average lifespan. Rather, look at 80 years old, the mention of 80 years old, as similar to 70, namely it is an average lifespan, but for a different category of people, namely those who are healthy. Then you discover something else come into mind. So people of average health, their average lifespan is 70. People who are of good health, their average lifespan is 80. See? If that is correct and is a possible understanding, which you must not reject too quickly, okay? It follows, therefore, that there can be also an average lifespan for those who are of weak health. And since it's 10 years in between, we can quite safely say it is 10 years less than 70. Okay? So, being an average age, there will be an upper limit and a lower limit for each of this average lifespan. So let us take the 70 years old. For most people of average health, their lifespan is 70, which means that when these people live up to 65 years old, they must expect to die. And on the average, and when they pass 70, they are expected to die by 75. So 65 to 75 gives us the average of 70. Of course, you can stretch 10 years both ways, in which case the more you stretch, the less useful that average lifespan is. See? But being practical and being realistic, we would say, if 70 is the average lifespan, take 5 years each side, making 10 years. From age 65 to 75, this is any time we will die during that period. Okay? And if you are a healthy person, 80 years old, between 75 and 85, you expect to die. And people with health problems, 60 is their average lifespan. Between 55 and 65, you expect to die. Okay? Now, if you see it that way, you discover you can have a helpful way of seeing how much more longer you can expect to go. And if by God's mercy you extend it further, thank God for it. Thank God for it. If you have the right attitude towards old age and it is with the view of being of service to God. See? Okay? But this is given to us by the Bible, and if this understanding is a reasonable one, you come to realize it helps us to estimate ourselves. Okay? Look at yourself. If all these years you have been sickly, you have a heart problem, you have a kidney problem, and so on, then I would say you can expect to live up to 60. That means any time between 55 and 65, you might go. So learn to adjust your life. And if God gives you longer than 65, be very thankful, oh, and make sure that all these years you have been living well for the Lord. But don't be surprised if you die between 55 and 65 because your average is 60. Okay? And for most of us, we are of average health, our lifespan is 70. So we might die between 65 instead of 75. See, it makes sense. And we see majority of the people are like that, between 65 and 75. Okay? Don't fool around. Don't think that you are one of those who live beyond 90 years old. So between 65 and 75, you are going to die. See, be prepared. See, whatever needs to be done has to be done. If you need to set your house in order, set your house in order when you're so near to that period. You see, we want to live well for the Lord. And who among us dare to say we are exceptionally healthy and our lifespan is 80, so we expect to die between 75 and 85. See, I'm saying by reasonably, I'm saying I'm healthy, but I dare not put myself in that category. Okay, I would like to place myself in the category 70 years old is my average lifespan. Between 65 and 75, I might go. If God spares me, thank God for it. I hope I would be kept mentally alert and I don't sin against God. I will be of service to Him. Okay? Now, this will help you to awaken to your realization that, to the realization that your days are truly numbered, just like Psalmist. And some have not awakened to the realization, you see. If you are not of the good health type, along the way you have heart problem or kidney problem or whatever, liver problem, then remember, 60 is your average lifespan. You could have died at age below 60. So if you pass 55, remember, any time between 55 and 65, you expect to die. So have you settled your papers? Have you put things in order? Have you served God well? Have you been reconciled with whoever you have offended? Have you made restitution? Are you in good relationship with God? You see, in right relationship with God. Okay. And for most of us, I would say 70. So between 65 and 75, we expect to go. Okay. So I'm making these arguments to help you truly number your days. Ask God to give you wisdom to number your days. So we serve God while we are able, we be submitted to God. If dementia sets in or ill health sets in, we learn to accept it when our children have to send us to nursing home. See, in the past, we look upon it as taboo, oh, unfilial and so on. But situations have changed. They have their own life, they have children, they soon might have their own grandchildren, and we are old, yeah, having... It takes time in a fast-moving world. They love you, but they can't afford that to give you the care that you need. So they have to pay for care to be given. And nowadays, nursing home is not quite like in the old days where the inmates are mistreated. Rather, they are professional. They give you professional help. See? So when needed, we have to go. Yeah? But a few can afford it. They set up a home for you next to theirs or employ people and so on to take care of you. That is unusual. But most of us have to be prepared. If we have to be sent to nursing home, don't chaff against it. Be ready to go. Huh? And when the time comes, the Lord calls us home, we be ready to go. Be ready. Okay? But before that happens, the loneliness of widowhood, the man or the woman goes first. See, widowhood can be the loneliness of widowhood can be alleviated. It can be minimized. How? By remarriage, by being active in the Lord's service, by engaging in some wholesome hobbies, or by a combination of all this. Now, remarriage is viable only if you are healthy, and although you are old, but you are. And therefore frail, but you're healthy, okay? So that is viable. But don't think of having children, especially if you are a man, you are still capable of fathering children. And if your wife is young, see? But it's unfair upon the children because you wouldn't be able to raise them up as a father, a normal father, see? Okay? And we are talking about widows. You already are married and most likely you have children already. Why want to start a new generation of children? It's unfair on your children, okay? And generally it is better to marry an older person and not a young woman. But the ideal when we are getting on in years is never to get married again. Like what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. He tells everyone in 1 Corinthians 7, given the circumstances, whatever that could be, people say it's persecution time, but that is only one possibility, but there could be other reasons. including his age, and he was not young anymore. So 1 Corinthians 7, verse 39, a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives, but if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment. And I think I also have the Spirit of God. In other words, although the Lord did not give specific instruction on that, by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, the Apostle Paul is giving this teaching, that there is good, better, and best, but the best is to remain unmarried. See? But to be remain unmarried, what if your years stretch on longer than expected? Oh, thank God for it. But by God's grace, we should be able to live well. See? By God's grace. Okay? And although we know of godly old people who have remarried in order to have companionship in the remaining stage of their lives on earth, I would still conclude that the best situation is not to get married, and since sexually you are not as active as in the younger days, and furthermore you can serve the Lord and be useful, and you have not much longer anyway. At any time God can call you home, and in view of that, it is better not to be hampered by another marriage. It is better to remain unmarried and pray that the Lord will provide for all your needs and to live wholesomely, happily to the end. So we conclude, in heaven there is no marriage, Matthew chapter 22 verse 30. We would still recognize one another. Our fellowship would be raised to a higher level on earth. See? So what a privilege it is to be used by God while on earth to prepare for life in heaven. So with these thoughts, we come to the end of this series. Are there questions or comments?